Yes, Sam Rojofsky here. Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KABC. Well, look, if you want to be on the program, got a lots to talk about today. 800-222-5222, 1-800-222-5222. And look, I don't want to say, see, I told you so, but already reports are trickling in that it seems that, well, I'll give you the one here. Mark Leibovich, he's the New York Times Magazine's national correspondent. He was talking to CBS News, and they're picking his brain because he's this guy who's, you know, following very closely all the transition movements in and around Trump Tower, following the speculations very closely. Apparently, he now has confirmation, or he's seeing that that Kellyanne Conway's remarks about Mitt Romney were indeed sanctioned by Trump. So it doesn't seem that that Kellyanne Conway has gone rogue. It's interesting. I like I said yesterday. I think there's a key purpose for it. You know, he's able to go and entertain the idea of Romney and still appease his base at the same time and send out smoke signals that, you know, hey, everybody, calm down. I know this guy has some problems and we hear you. I don't know where this all ends up. Did you see what happened? He's dining with Romney, or he dined with Romney tonight, mere couple hours ago or so. But then he also met with Petraeus and tweeted that he was deeply impressed. Guy, you know, if you were, this doesn't happen, by the way. Generally speaking, when you're applying for a job, you don't have your, you know, the boss or the human resources person that you're interviewing with. You know, they don't typically send out tweets that you can see about how impressed they are with the other candidate that got interviewed, you know, a few hours before you. I mean, talk about how unnerving this is. And I don't know, maybe he's just toying with him. Maybe Trump is just toying with Romney as a cat would with a little mouse. And if that in fact is the case, well, deservedly so. I also will talk about, I want to talk about the attack at OSU a little bit more in depth. And I think there's a greater meaning here beyond just what happened. And as per usual on this program, we go beyond the headlines and look to get into depth here. And I know information is early, but already there are some gems out from CNN making excuses for the attacker. And we're going to get into that probably next segment. Okay. In case you missed it, hot news today. Hot news. Trump announces that Carrier Plant will keep jobs in the United States. Carrier, who are they? They are the air conditioning company that became a bit of a flashpoint during the campaign. If you'll recall, Carrier was one of the big plants that announced that they would be closing their plant and moving the jobs down to Mexico. And there was actually, by the way, this company, just a bunch of numbnuts, because if you remember, they decided to have a mass firing. Did you see the video? Ah, you've seen it. Somebody filmed on their cell phone what took place, and what happened? Management just put everybody, put all the workers in a room, and then told them, "Hey, you know, sorry, we got some cost problems, and we're gonna have to just kind of let you go here at the end of the year, or whenever, I forget the deadline for it." And you could see, I mean, it was heartbreaking. Let me tell you. Yeah, this was terrible to watch a room full of people literally have their livelihoods yanked out from underneath them. And it could not have been a better piece of propaganda for the Trump campaign. It wasn't fake news. I'm pretty sure it was real. Carrier, yeah, they're part of a larger group. Part of a big conglomerate company But apparently here's the backstory. You might have heard the headline, and you might be thinking, well, but Sam, listen, you know, this isn't really Trump's doing. Trump isn't even president yet. I mean, what can he really do to affect a company like Carrier to stay? That's a good question because, I similarly remember with the Ford plant. You know, Ford was supposed to do the same thing, send the plant down to Mexico, and then Ford announced that they wouldn't do it. And, you know, the media roundly came around and said, they weren't going to do it. This decision was made before the election. Don't give credit to Trump. I mean, it's not his doing. So here again, looking at what's happening behind the scenes. So apparently, here with the Carrier plant, Trump and Mike Pence seem to have been lobbying Carrier, meeting with them privately ever since the election occurred. Okay, so there have been a number of meetings that have been happening off the radar. You'll notice that there are things that Trump does publicly, and there are things that he does quietly. If you already are surprised by the fact that he became president and wrote him off as a buffoon, I think the second part of that sentence came before the first part. You wrote him off as a buffoon, and then you're surprised that he became president. So just know that there are things that he does publicly, and when he does those things publicly, like parade all these, you know, different applicants for Secretary of State, there's a reason for it, like we talked about yesterday. And when he has these quiet meetings that don't get publicity, there's a reason for that, too. He's able to go stealth mode. And so on this Carrier deal, he went stealth mode. And so not just with Pence, but all the other members of his transition team, you know, he basically sat down with these guys, and it's not clear exactly what was said, but here is something you ought to know. So the parent company of Carrier is a group called United Technologies. Now, I've never heard of them, and probably neither of you. But apparently, do you know where they get 10%? You know who their largest customer is? Huh. Want to take a wild stab at it? By the way, they have $56 billion in revenues a year. So they're that's no chump change. $56 billion in revenues. Sorry, that's not all their revenues. That's just the part of their revenues that they get from their biggest customer, about 10% of their revenue. The Pentagon. That's right, the Pentagon. Now. Well, now, when you're a big customer, look, a big group, you know, 10% of your revenue is 10% of your revenue. That's right. You've got leverage. Yes, you do. And Trump may not have the levers of power yet, but he will come January 20th. There will be an inauguration. He will become president. And at that point, he's got a lot of power to wield. So he's able to already talk in the place of the president. In fact, I would argue Trump has right now a lot more power than Obama does, even though Obama has actual power. This is a side note. I don't want to belabor the point, but Obama is the president, but he's gone. He's a lame duck. It's over. He can't say anything. He can't promise anything of consequence. Trump, on the other hand, has 4 years coming up shortly. So I only bring this up to say he apparently sat down with these guys. I'm sure that these Pentagon contracts, $56 billion in revenues from the Pentagon, were discussed. Okay, but the other thing that's interesting, a person that is speaking on condition of anonymity, someone at the meeting, you know, is blabbing. And now, by the way, are they really blabbing, or is Trump letting this out? Food for thought. He said that he in the meeting, he reiterated his campaign pledge to be friendlier to business, to ease regulations, and to overhaul the corporate tax code. And then he also toned down some of his rhetoric on tariffs and that type of thing. So now I want to put this all into perspective. It's not just about saving 1,000 jobs. because that's, by the way, what this is here. I'm not sure he was able to save all the jobs, but he saved 1,000 jobs. It's not about that. And we're talking about the carrier. You know, remember the carrier factory that was going to ship all the jobs, right? So now over to Mexico, and now it's announced that 1,000 jobs are staying. This is already, to me, such an enormous contrast from where we were these past 8 years. You know, Obama wouldn't even deign to speak to members of Congress. I mean, no, I think history will remember him when the dust settles on the Obama presidency, and with the passage of time and the benefit of looking back. I think a lot of his ineffectiveness came from his unwillingness to sit down and broker deals. He wasn't a deal broker. He was a deal breaker, but he wasn't a deal broker. Yeah. I mean, he really has a disdain for politics. This is ironic for a person who's president. Bill Clinton, the exact opposite. There was somebody who loved to get and sit down with members of Congress and wrangle them and squeeze them in a deal and get them to go his way. Obama was never like that, which is why he ruled by executive fiat. Instead of working with Congress and getting Congress to adopt his agenda, he, for the most part, used executive orders over and over again, more than any other president, after hammering Bush about it. Remember back in 2008, just hammered Bush on it. And can you imagine lofty, liberal President Obama, the great thinker-in-chief, the great pontificator, bloviator, the demagogue of demagogues, deigning to stoop, to lower himself, to talk to some air conditioning people, to save 1,000 jobs? Never. Take this from me. Never would that have happened. And so we are already starting to get some, I think, encouraging glimpses, and not because it saved 1,000 jobs, but because it shows that Trump is willing to roll up his sleeves and sit down and put the screws to people. And you can argue that it's just optics, you know, that this is a posture that he's adopting for political for political points. My answer to that is, so what? If there is an actual result that is tangible, that is real, that is of real benefit to the country, that's good. And moreover, it also shows somebody who's willing to start to get to work even before they become president. And I like that. That's a can-do attitude. And that is exactly where skills from the business sector, from the private sector, translate into good leadership skills in the public sector. And remember, we've now suffered. You and I, we've suffered for a year and a half of the media telling us, well, you know, with this Trump guy, you know, his private sector skills doesn't help him rule and be a president. That's totally different. But you and I understand that when you're running a small business, even, shoot, you can have 10 employees. You can be self-employed. Maybe you're a contractor. You know the kind of, you know the skills that it takes for you to make things work. Guess what? In order for your thing to work, you got to make it work with another guy and another guy and that lady and this people and that company. And those are people skills. And that's what it came down to. This carrier thing shows me that he's able to sit down with people and say, let's make a deal. Let's make this work. What do we need to do to make this work? And they probably unloaded on it. Well, you know what? For the last 8 years, the government has basically taken a giant dump on us over and over and over again. That last guy, you know, the demagogue, the pontificator, the law professor. I say that with all respect to all my great law professors that I have. So this is where we're at right now. And I think it's all great news. And remember, just remember what I told you here. There are things that Trump is doing quietly and in private, and there's things that he's doing publicly. And so that's where, when we talk about these veep stakes, Secretary of State stakes, these revolving doors of job interviews that are taking place, know that there is a bit of pageantry to it. And I think, you know, and I think there's a concerted effort here to exhaust the media of all of their venom and all of their, irritability, and to just wear them down so that when the pick comes down, there won't be a lot of bite left. Okay. We'll talk about that a little more here in just a few minutes when we get back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
The phone lines are open now.
Right now?
Right now.
At 800-ABC-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC, and here we are, talking about the news of the day and going beyond just the surface. No fake news here, but definitely we don't sugarcoat anything. So you're gonna have if you're a sensitive millennial, you will need a safety pin or two. All right. Yeah, this public vetting. You know, I heard somebody say that Trump is conducting these interviews a little bit like he would under, in the show The Apprentice. And I'm not a big expert on the show. I think I've seen all of maybe half an episode. I never got hooked. But so there's a theatrical element to all of this. But I mentioned yesterday, I also think there's a very practical element to it, which is, and a devious element to it, which is, if you've got somebody you want to nominate who is controversial and who is going to get savaged in the press, and might perhaps also be savaged on Capitol Hill, what's the best thing you can do? Now, you don't want to name them right away. By the way, this is a little bit like negotiating. Look, let me give you a story. So I was in Barbados, and my daughter, Vera, she's the love of my life, and we go to this little place called Oyston's. So we leave our spectacular hotel and take a cab about 30 minutes into this part of Bridgetown, the main capital, which is, there's a fishing village there. And it's the place to go. Every Friday night, they get everybody together and they fry fish at these little shops. And you can go from shop to, I had flying fish. I had weird stuff too. I bit into a pigtail, and I'm not ready to talk about that yet. But I bring all this up to say that there are also these little stands, they're selling different things, and you barter with people. This is what you do. And I love to, I love to deal. So we find this necklace that she loves, right? I mean, this is at the stand. And I said, no, play it cool. We can't, we can't go in right for the necklace. And so I walk by and I ask about every necklace there, but not that one. And the point of it is, of course, is I'm trying to distract him. I don't want the guy to know that this is what I really want. I don't want that. I don't want him to know. Is the minute that the person that you're making a deal with knows what you want, you're screwed. So what he's trying to do here is and this is an important position, and it's in, and remember, Trump is going to be fighting. These are there are positions that he needs Senate confirmation for. So forget the media and forget public opinion. He needs Senate. He needs the Senate to confirm these appointments. And there's a history of the Senate refusing to confirm appointments. And I talked to you one most recently, Bush administration, I believe, was John Bolton, whom I suspect Trump is strongly favoring for Secretary of State. And he knows that that Bolton is a controversial pick even among Republicans. So what is he trying to do with the, he's listing he doesn't want to make it seem like he's got one horse in the race. He's trying to scare some people with the idea of having people that, you know, I think, well, Romney's liked in the establishment, but you know, why would you want, on the subject of Romney, why would you want somebody that just hates you so, has come out so strongly against you? I heard somebody mention, you know, why not just go for Alicia Machado? I don't know where you'd, maybe the Department of the Posterior could put her in there. You remember she's the Miss Piggy, Miss Housekeeping contestant. But, you know, it's almost like that. You know, why not just have, you know, somebody from the Hillary team become your Secretary of State? And this is it. The Secretary of State position is so crucial because Hillary demonstrated that it can't just be a rubber stamp for the presidency, that the person that you put in that position is critical. And you've got to have somebody you trust. You have to have somebody that's competent. You have to have somebody that can stand up to our enemies. And the world right now is a dangerous place. And you want somebody who's got some balls. Yeah. No meow meows, please. All right. John Wolf is next with the news. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. I'm still letting this election sink in, and I'm studying it carefully because I'm not sure that running against the media is a good idea, and a lot of smart money says that it's not. But there's no doubt that Trump ran a campaign that was against the media.
Call now. Call me if you're interested.
What's your phone number?
800-ABC-KABC.
Ask for the phone number, not the phone letters.
That's 800-222-5222.
Thank you.
Sam Rzhovsky here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Okay, so talking about this this public, I don't know, interviews, right? Job interviews that Trump is conducting for various positions. None more public and more, I think, more humiliating ultimately to the prospects, as is the position of Secretary of State, and as he goes to interview Romney. Now, I have a very important point here I want to raise, and I'm going to Rick in Oceanside. Are you there, Rick?
Sir.
Rick, how are you?
I'm very well.
Good.
So
tell me what are your thoughts here?
Well, the point I was just going to make is I think you're right. He's kind of testing the waters. He goes by what the media does. But just to remind, you know, a lot of folks who aren't up to speed on some historical stuff, Henry Kissinger was very anti-Nixon. He made a number of comments during the campaign that Nixon was incompetent and he was not qualified for the office of president, which, considering he'd been a vice president, was rather interesting. But Kissinger was an advisor to Lyndon Johnson, and yet I think to draw a parallel, not to say that Romney's going to be a Henry Kissinger, but to draw the parallel that, you know, all of a sudden when he brought him aboard, ultimately Kissinger turned out to be, I think we could argue, would be one of our better secretaries of state. So, you know, sometimes they got to reach out and figure out who's going to be the best guy, whether or not that's there or not. But I just wanted to, you know, a lot of folks are saying, well, you know, Romney was so rude to him during the campaign. How could you pick the guy? And I was just saying Nixon did it.
Yeah, you raise a good point. You raise a good point in the sense of bring up the Kissinger parallel. Although I believe that Kissinger came on board to the Nixon camp during the course of Nixon's 68 campaign. I mean, he participated in the 68 campaign, and I know that he was at times critical of Nixon before that. But I don't remember it being of anything near as close to the magnitude of Romney, where you've got somebody. I would say Romney maybe being the most prominent Republican critic of Trump's. I mean, it's same party, and that's one point. The other point is, you know, it's funny because I have a good friend, and he, you know, anyway, he worked inside the Nixon White House, and so there's some great history. I always remember hearing stories about Kissinger, and Kissinger is a total. He's a rear end kisser, is what he is. Yet I've got great stories about Kissinger just basically groveling to walk the president's dogs. I mean, he was so keen to please President Nixon that he was basically rushing out to walk his dogs at the White House. And I bring this up to say that it's funny, you know, maybe there's some parallel here, because I see what Mitt is doing. I see what Romney's doing here and how he's appearing and going to this dinner. And then he's going to the dinner, even though, you know, maybe I think, 2 hours before, you know, Trump is really impressed with Petraeus and tweets that out. It's groveling and it's oddly servient. And I'm not sure I want oddly servient as a skill or as a trait of our Secretary of State. I'm worried that the guy that is oddly servient, and I would argue, I mean, and it's a whole show we could do on whether Kissinger was an effective Secretary of State. You know, I don't think so personally, but I don't know if when it comes to Romney, we want a guy who is so keen to please and just rolling over for Trump. And so compromised by Trump right now, that he is willing to just do whatever to make it work in the face of, I think, just just blatant rudeness and repudiation. So, Rick, I really appreciate the call. Thank you so much for reaching out. When we come back, I want to talk about this Ohio State thing. And the whiny little things this guy said, and why it's a problem. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Talk Radio, 790
KABC.
Sam Rejofsky here. Yup. Earlier today, a couple women got into a bit of an altercation in South Los Angeles. Things quickly escalated. And pretty soon, what we had was a demolition derby happening in the parking lot. That's right. They started going at it with each other, in each other's cars, bumping into each other, crashing into each other, whatever you want to call it. One giant mess. They even hit a fire hydrant and shot a geyser of water straight into the air. All right. Now, if this isn't made for Sweet James, I don't know what is. First of all, by the way, I'll give you a pro tip. This is a lawyer pro tip. Are you ready for this? Okay. If you think that somebody has rear-ended you on purpose or hit you on purpose, don't tell the insurance company that, right? Well, first of all, what are you supposed to do? That's right. You're supposed to call 1-800-881-2021 because you want to talk to Sweet James. You want to get him on your side. You don't want to deal with the insurance company. And I'm going to give you, here's one great example of why you shouldn't. Because if you call up the insurance company and you say, well, hey, This crazy lady, she bumped into me. She did it on purpose. Guess what? Stuff that happens on purpose, the insurance company ain't responsible for. So you just talked yourself right out of insurance covering your claim. How's that? But you didn't know that. And that's why you need a lawyer. You need a good lawyer, and Sweet James is the guy that's going to take you through all of it, up, down, and through, and to a successful conclusion. It's the only, he is the only lawyer we trust here on the program. He's our guy, and he's your guy, too. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And, well, I want to talk about this Ohio State thing because I just was, I was triggered earlier today. Oh, where do I begin? Well, I am really grateful to be in this country. I'll tell you that. I always talk about that. I'm not going to reiterate all of that. But so it turns out this guy's an immigrant. Okay. That's great. So, but I want to bring this up because CNN, of course, if, apologists for all liberal causes, immediately get on the horn here to begin to explain the depth of this person. I'm talking about the attacker at Ohio State. His name is Abdul Razak Ali Artan, a Somalian immigrant. He came here via Pakistan. Turns out, by the way, interestingly enough, no father in the picture. He's just him, his six siblings, and his mother, a single mother. So they come here. One other thing I want to note here, they were actually helped by a Catholic charity. Did you know that? So a Catholic charity helped bring them here to the States. Very compassionate work. These folks do a lot of good. They're called the Catholic Charities of Dallas. They brought them over, provided them with housing, settled the family, provided a job for the mother, et cetera, et cetera. Kid gets an educational opportunity, goes off to college. First, he goes to community college, and then he ends up at Ohio State. And before all this transpired, he goes on record with the Ohio State University newspaper, and in a piece titled Humans of Ohio State, I already know where that piece of journalism is going, he is quoted as saying, "If people look at me, a Muslim praying, I don't know what they're going to think, what's going to happen." He says he just transferred from a community college, which he notes had rooms, prayer rooms for Muslim students. But on this huge campus, you know, now went to a much bigger school, he didn't know where to go. He didn't know where to pray. He didn't know what to do. And then he said he didn't blame people for the views they held about Muslims. It's the media that put that picture in their heads, so they're just going to have it. And it's going to make them feel uncomfortable. He told the newspaper he was kind of scared right now, quote unquote. So I'm listening to this whininess from a person who left Somalia, which, by the way, I'm guessing is no five-star beautiful paradise, via Pakistan, another hellhole and a half, ends up in the beautiful state of Ohio via Texas. Where's his gratitude? Where's his gratitude? It's a simple question. And I want CNN to explain it, because they're just making excuses for him. They're already trying to set up the picture of why it's our fault that he went and ran over some people and stabbed them. It's not our fault. In fact, I'll tell you that our fault is going too far. And I'm going to talk about that when I come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. I am picturing it that dramatic. I am picturing Trump sitting at the center of the table, arms folded. I bet he had that scowl. And then he's flanked by his advisors, and they're all looking. And I bet the lighting, I bet Trump had it down to the lighting, dramatic music playing. I wouldn't put it past him.
Home of the smartest listeners in Southern California. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. talking about the immigrant angle to the Ohio State attacker case. You know, he's from Somalia, seems to have pledged allegiance to ISIS right before the attack takes place. And details are still coming in. But let me address this. The issue of appeasing different groups, okay, in this case, Muslims. I mean, this whole idea that he goes on this rant about a few months before this happened, he's telling the school newspaper, well, I didn't have a place to pray, and I had to pray in public, and people are looking at me, and it's the fault of the media, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm thinking, look, hey, you've come to this country, you've gotten a great gift of education, everyone's taken care of you, the Catholic charities have taken you, the charities that helped you, that placed you, that gave your mom a job, that put you in school, do they have a place to pray at community colleges? Does the community college over here in my neighborhood offer a chapel for Catholics? No, they don't. And so it's an interesting thing that we go out of our way, and I'm fascinated by this. I am fascinated by this to no end, and I intend to explore this issue continuously until, I don't know, somebody shuts me up, which is, look, why do we go out of our way to appease Islam so much? Why? I'll give you a tale of two countries, okay? Do you remember earlier this year when Rouhani, the president of Iran, came with great fanfare? You know, Obama just paid him, I don't know, $1 billion in cash and lifted sanctions, and he went on his grand tour of Europe to reestablish and normalize relations with the Western world. And he came to Rome, and he was to visit the Roman prime minister, and they were, you know, and the president, and they were supposed to meet in a museum in Rome. And you know what they did? They covered up the nude statues, right? This is Rome, right? Rome is, there are basically beautiful nude statues everywhere. If you like boobies, Rome is the place for you. But not if you're Rouhani, because you didn't see any boobies, because they were covered. They were tarped. That is appeasement. It's not tolerance. It's appeasement. Then Rouhani went to France. In France, the president, François Hollande, invited him to a fancy feast at some bougie restaurant. And Rouhani said, well, I'll go. Of course I'll go, but only if the food is halal and there's no alcohol served. At which point, François Hollande say, non, non, screw you. And they moved it to a lunch. This is it. I have a Mormon mother-in-law. When I go to her house, I don't bring a flask. When she comes to my house, I drink wine. It's that simple. You come to our house, this is America, bitches. I mean, this is what it is. I'm sorry. Get a grip. Deal with it. You're in our house. And you know what? If you're a liberal, you've got to understand the difference between tolerance. Okay, which is fair and square in all of this. But you've got to know the difference between tolerance and capitulation. And I am telling you, as a dogma and as a political doctrine, Islam wants us to capitulate. And I'm going to talk more and more about this because it's an important issue for us to grasp and understand why this is so important and why it's when we deal with other countries, when we deal, we've got to. You know, you come to our house, you play by our rules. And that, and isn't it just such a foundational thing that when we have immigrants, and I'm all for it, when people come to this country, they should be grateful? I sure think so. I don't think that is a radical point of view at all in any way, shape, or form. All right, we're off for 2 days with the Kings. Go, Kings, go. And we'll be back on Friday with more offensive things to say. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio, 790 KABC.